This week's parsha is Parshas Baalotcha, which is really a very dramatic parsha as it describes the Jewish people on their journey toward the land of Israel. Torah begins with the mitzvah. We'll study this in depth today with God's help, of Aaron lighting the menorah, the command for him to light the menorah. Then it details the job of Levim per se, to sing shira, to sing song in the temple. And this is really almost like the finishing touches of the last week's parasha and the previous week's parasha, of the end details before we move on to the land of Israel. We then have a story which really doesn't fit in the right place here, of Pesach Sheni, of the Jewish people keeping the law of Pesach. It really begins at the beginning of the Sefer, because it happened, the beginning of the Sefer is on the 20th day of Iyar, and this is in Nisan. And there were people who were Tamei LaNefesh, who were impure, and said, what do? We want to bring a Paschal lamb, but we can't. We're impure. But is that a reason that we should be denied the opportunity of doing a mitzvah? To which Moshe Rabbeinu asked God what to do, and Kosh Baruch Hu told him they can make it up on what we call Pesach Sheni a month later. Then with this all out of the way, the Torah then begins, and the drama is so apparent. You need to close your eyes in reading the parsha, and you hear the drum beats that's going on. The Torah describes how on the 20th day of Iyar, they packed up their camp, and for the first time they left Mount Sinai. And it describes in detail the encampment, and who went first, and who went second, and how the tabernacle was all packed up. And we describe the chatzotzros, the trumpets, that were a call to the people to move. And the ananim, and the clouds that lifted when the Jewish people were to move, and settled when the Jewish people were to stop. And we have the whole drama, really like this grand march of Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, into the land of Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu telling his father-in-law, come with us, we're about to now go to the land. Nosima nachnu alamakom, we're traveling to the land, nothing's stopping us. And then the climax of the parasha, Vayibin so Aaron, when the Aaron traveled, then the enemies are scattered away. They're on their way to Israel, 3 days they'll be there. And then, Vayhi ha'am kimit onanim rabba alznei Hashem, the people began to murmur. What they said, we have no idea. They just murmur, they complain. And then that's a downhill slope. They got consumed by a fire. And then the people desired meat. And then Moshe Rabbeinu threw up his hands and he said, I've had it. I can't handle these people anymore. To which Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I'll give you 70 elders to help you out. And the famous two of them were Eldad and Medad. And the parasha ends with Miriam speaking Lashon Hara about her brother, and the camp waiting for Miriam to recover from Sarat, from leprosy. And then we begin Parshat Shlach, where they send out the spies, and we just go continually downhill. Instead of a 3-day journey to the land of Israel, it turns into a 40-year journey to the land of Israel. Tremendous amount in this week's Parsha. I mean, you don't know where to begin or end. It's just packed. So, we'll take the easy way out. Let's begin at the beginning, and that way we can say we can get beyond the first section. Let's take a look at it. We have the last verse in Parsha Noso we alluded to last week in Source 1, that when Moshe came into the communion tent to speak with God, he would hear the voice speaking to him from between the two kuvim on the ark cover over the Ark of Testimony, and God thus spoke to him. And this verse is a culmination of the gifts of the Nesim, the gifts of the princes of the tribes that were brought each day of the consecration of the tabernacle. So when the tabernacle was finally built, so every day, starting from the first day that it was erected, Nachshon offered his sacrifice, and then for 11 subsequent days, each of the Nesim offered their sacrifice. And then as the culmination of this whole tabernacle experience, we have the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to utilize the Ol Moed, to utilize the communion tent as an opportunity for him to speak to God. That's the end of last week's parasha. We begin this week's parasha with the following. God spoke to Moshe, telling him to speak to Aaron and say to him, when you light the lamps, the 7 lamps shall illuminate the menorah. Aaron did that, lighting the lamps to illuminate the menorah as God commanded Moshe. The menorah was made of a single piece of beaten gold. Everything from its base to its blossom consisted of a single piece of beaten metal. The menorah was thus made exactly according to the vision that God showed Moshe. It's this section that I'd like to focus in on and raise a number of questions try to get a deeper worldview that comes from this section. A lot of questions that are raised here. I'd like to work on two ideas. One is based on the Zohar HaKadosh, and one is based on the Medrash. Let's start with the Zohar HaKadosh, try to understand that, and then try to develop the Medrash, and we'll take two approaches today. The Zohar HaKadosh is found, quoted in the Orgid Al-Yahu, in Source 2. He says, Vayas Kein Aaron, and Aaron did exactly as he was told. And that's also a very famous question. Would we think that Aaron didn't do as he was told? Right? Rashi quotes, Melamed Shloshina, we learned that he didn't change from what he was told. He did exactly as he was told to do. And again, if God told me to do something, I would assume that I would do it exactly the way I was told. So what do we learn by Yas Kein Aaron, and Aaron did this? So says the Zohar HaKadosh to follow. He says, the Eitzo Bria Ta'or, in connection with the creation of light, in the original creation story, Tiv, we have written, Vayhi Or, and it was light. The Lok Tiv, it does not say, Vayhi Kein, and it was so. Ki Bishar Sheshime Breshi. If you look through the creation story, after God created something, it always says, Vayhi Kein, and it was. What's the one exception? By the light. It doesn't say, Vayhi Kein, and it was so. It says, Vayhi Or, and there was light. So it explains the Zohar HaKadosh the following. Why? Mishum shelo niskayim ha'or b'oto shleimus kemosh nivra. Because the light was not in the exact form as it was created. As we know, the famous statement of our rabbi, Kadosh Baruch Hu created the great light. And then he realized, right, it was the light that the Medrash describes, Adam HaRishon was able to see from one end of the world to the other. It was a tremendous, tremendous spiritual light. But Kadosh Baruch Hu realized that this light was too great for the wicked people. So what did he do? Vehivdilo l'tzadikim l'atid lavo. He concealed it for the righteous people in the future. This light, which was concealed, that we only have part of its light now, is that famous description. It's called the Or HaGonuz, the hidden light. So says very beautifully the Zohar HaKadosh the following. That's why by Aaron it says Vayas Kein Aaron. That word Kein, which was missing in Maisa Breishit, Vayhi Kein, Vayhi Kein, Vayhi Kein, but by the light it was Vayhi Or. Now by Aaron we have that expression which was missing in the creation story. Vayas Kein Aaron. That word Kein now appears. Sha'aron b'avadato asa et ha-Kein shayach haser b'abriya. Aaron is coming to rectify that which was missing in the creation. Why or how? Shayidei hadlakat ha-menorah. Through the lighting of the menorah, himshich Aaron ha-Kohen et ha-Or ha-Ganut. The lighting of the menorah was like a continuation of the Or ha-Ganut. The menorah light in the temple was a function or a form of that original hidden light. It had that power. And that's what it means by Yas Kein Aaron when Rashi says, like each Yivchosh al Aaron Shiloshina, to praise Aaron for not changing, which means that all 40 years that he lit the menorah, he was Mamshich Babadato et Ha'or HaGanuz. He was able to extract this hidden light for all 40 years without changing. It was on the same level, Avuda Yomi Cham Shachat Ha'or, every day drawing this intense light. Very fascinating Zohar HaKadosh. Very deep. So in a nutshell, the Zohar HaKadosh is saying is that the menorah lighting is really a continuation of that original light in the creation story. That light, which was the Or HaGanuz, which was concealed, Aaron HaKohen, through the lighting of the menorah, is drawing out that original light every single day that he lit the menorah. Question number one, what does this mean? What does this mean on a much deeper level? Drawing out light, the Or HaGanuz, the hidden light, the menorah, what's the connection? What does it mean that Aaron drew out this light every single day? So idea number one we need to understand is what does the Zohar HaKadosh mean? What's this concept of the Or HaGanuz and its connection to the menorah? Question number two. It's a very famous medrash and the Ramban on this medrash, which we're all familiar with. Source 3, the Sedra opens with a brief description of the menorah and the Mishkan and the command that Aaron and his descendants are charged with its lighting. This follows directly after lengthy description of the offerings brought at the dedication of the altar, described at the end of Parshas Naso. The connection between these two events is the subject of a well-known Medrash. The Medrash says the following. We find above that all the tribes brought offerings except for the tribe of Levi. And this is the Medrash that Rashi quotes at the beginning of our Parsha. Who was the prince of Levi? None other than Aaron. And Aaron did not offer together with the other princes. It was 12 days of the consecration. Every tribe brought except Levi. So he said, perhaps the tribe of Levi is not acceptable because of me. God said to Moshe, go and say to Aaron, I have prepared you for greater things than that. You're worried that you didn't bring and your tribe didn't bring Lohu v'lo shifto, not him, not his tribe, a gift on the day when the tabernacle was consecrated. I'm telling you there's something even greater for him. As for the sacrifices, they are only applicable when the Beis HaMikdash stands, but the lengths are everlasting. So says the Medrash, don't worry, they brought korbanos, they brought sacrifices, but I have something even greater for you. What do I have for you? I have the lighting of the menorah. So here is Ramban takes this Medrash and asks the most obvious question. Source 4. It's not clear to me why Aaron was satisfied with the lighting of the menorah, whereas he appears not to have been happy with the twice daily incense, which the verses consider praiseworthy, or with the annual daily flower offerings on the Yom Kippur surface, all which only could be performed by him, the entering into the Holy of Holies. Says the Ramban, let's hold on a second. Aaron, you're upset that you were not part of this whole grand ceremony of the consecration of the temple. What's going on here? Look at what jobs you have, Aaron. You liked offer the incense, and you performed the avodah on Yom Kippur, and you're involved in walking into the Kosher Kodashim. That's not good enough for you? You're upset? You're not part of the ceremony? You want something greater? And then when he hears about the menorah, that appeases him? Doesn't seem to make sense. There are far greater services than that of the menorah. So therefore, says the Ramban, it is, and also the question on the Medrash is, and your lights are going to be everlasting? Well, the lights of menorah also were extinguished when there was no more sacrifices. So there are no more sacrifices, no more lights. So what does the Medrash mean? Yours are forever. So says the Ramban, it is also well known that when the Beis HaMikdash is not extant and the sacrifices are canceled, lighting the menorah also becomes defunct. Rather, this Medrash hints at the Hanukkah of the Chashmonaim, the Hanukkah familiar to us, which applies even after the destruction. Very famous Ramban. That it wasn't only that Aaron was getting the mitzvah here of lighting the menorah. He was getting something much deeper. He was getting the concept that his descendants, the Chashmonaim, who we know were descendants of Kohanim, of the priests, they were the ones who were going to light the menorah in the times when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by the Chashmonaim, were defiled. And they are the ones who are going to now bring about the lighting of the menorah, which is found in everybody's home. So therefore, why was Aaron appeased? Because he got something that was lasting beyond the temple service, but it went into, until today, into generations today. But we can then ask the question on the Ramban, which Yor Gedayahu asked in Source 5. He says, but hold on a second. Dilachora ner Chanukah lava voda hiklau. Aaron wanted to be part of the temple service. Lighting a Chanukah candle in our house, is that part of the temple service? What do you mean to say, Ramban, that Aaron, I'm going to give you something that's going to last forever. What's going to last forever? The ner Chanukah, the lights of Chanukah. That's a very nice idea. But practically, what Aaron wanted was to be part of the temple service. That's not part of the temple service. And in fact, it's done outside the temple. What connection is there between the service and the mikdash and the lighting of the Chanukah candle? So in a nutshell, our second question. This is just a question. We haven't even gotten the answer yet. The second question is, what does the Medrash mean that Aaron was upset? Why was Aaron upset? How is the fact that he's given the mitzvah of lighting the candle and the connection to the Chanukah lights, which aren't even part of the temple service, a good appeasement for Aaron? Those are the two questions. The Or HaGanos, this hidden light, and what is the whole concept of the lights and the menorah of Chanukah and the role of Aaron. So I'd like to take two approaches today. I'd like to take an approach which focuses in on Aaron in particular, right? The language of the Medrash is lo hu v'lo shifto, that he and his tribe were not involved in the offering of the princes. So let's understand it on a personal level of Aaron's involvement. And then the second approach, and that'll be approach primarily based on the Or Gedaliahu, and the second approach will be the approach of the concept of him in connection with his tribe of Levi, their involvement with the menorah and the consecration, and that will be based primarily on the Shem Yishmua. The Zayin LaTorah, Rav Sarutzkin, in source number 6, makes a very fascinating comment. He says that it wasn't only Aaron who was upset when all the princes were bringing presents. Because he said, there were really three leaders, Parnasim Tovim, who really were connected with the Jewish people and wanted to be connected with the experience of the consecration of the temple. And those three leaders were Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. All three of them were really upset. How can we contribute? So in terms of Moshe, the Zayin LaTorah points that in source 6, Shigam LaMoshe Aita Chalisho Sadas, he also was upset. Shelo Hishtatev B'Nedavah L'Chanukat HaMishkan, that he didn't bring a gift at the time of the consecration of the tabernacle. V'amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, God said to him, Chayecha Shediburcha Chaviv Alai Yoter Min HaKol. Don't worry. The fact that you communicate with me, you speak to me, that's your contribution to the tabernacle and to the Jewish people. And that's why that verse which we begin with, the last verse in chapter 7 in source 1, ends the section of the prince's gifts. After the princes brought all the gifts, we then have that verse which doesn't seem really to fit in. And God would speak to Moshe from the top of the Kruvim. Why is that there? Because this was the gift that Moshe Rabbeinu had, so to speak, that he brought, and that was the gift of communication with God and the ability to transfer that communication to Jewish people. So if that's the end of the last week's parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu's gift, we now immediately move into Aaron's gift. What's his gift? His gift is the menorah. What does this mean on a deeper level? So there's a wonderful medrash, which is brought down in Surah 7, the Or Gedaliahu quotes in his footnote, where the medrash says, Ubivo Moshe al Ol Moed L'daberito. The verse that Moshe Rabbeinu came into the tabernacle and God spoke to him, Ma diber elav, what was it that God said to him? What was the first command or the first communication that God had with Moshe in the Ol Moed? And that was our verse, Balotcha Taneiros, when you bring up the candles. This was the first thing told to Moshe Rabbeinu from the Ol Moed. That's the end of the Medrash, Adka. So explain to Or Gedaliahu, what's the meaning of the Medrash? He says, Shishteya parshio, these two sections, hein bi'inyan nitinat ha-Torah ba-Mishkan, resembles and reflects the giving of the Torah, which is manifested in the period of the Mishkan. There's a Torah shebichtav, a written tradition, and a Torah shebaal peh, an oral tradition. And that's what the Medrash means, that after Moshe Rabbeinu has his communication with God, and Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, symbolizes the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, because he was the one that brought down the written Torah to the Jewish people. Immediately, we now begin with the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral tradition, and that's symbolized by Aaron. And it's no accident, he says, almost in parentheses, that just like the first command that God gave in this world was Yehi Or, let there be light, the first command in the Mishkan that God spoke to Moshe was what? Balotcha Taneiro, to light the candle. Which brings us back to that Zohar, that there's this inner connection between the first light in the world and the Balotcha Taneiros and the kindling of the light of the menorah. These two lights are definitely interconnected. What does this mean that Aaron represents Torah Shebaal Peh? So we know that Aaron is always in the form of the speaker. Aaron will be to you lepeh, as a mouth, kisifte kohen yishmu das, pasuk malachi, that the lips of the kohen guard the Torah. that the Kohanim are the representatives of the teachers and understanders of Torah, and that's the Torah Shebaal Peh. They're able to take the written law and then transmit it and work through the written law into what we call the oral tradition, which is based on the written. And then if we understand this, that Aaron represents the Torah Shebaal Peh, we can then understand the gifts of the Nesim on a deeper level. The Or Gedaliahu explains in 8a, is that when the Nesim, the princes, came to bring their sacrifices, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to accept them. He says, I commanded the Torah to bring such sacrifices, and they even brought a Korban Yochid, an individual is not allowed to bring a sacrifice on Shabbos, and they did. He says, what's going on here? I can't accept this. They're creating their own ideas here. So God says, no, accept them. They're very precious to me. Why? Because what the Nesim did was they were not working on a level of Torah Shebichsav, that which was commanded in the Torah, but the Nesim, on the great level that they were on, understood on a deeper level what was required of them. And this deeper level of being able to intuit from the Torah what God wants from us, this is the level of Torah Shebaal Peh, this is the level of the oral tradition, where one uses one's own mindset within the guidelines of Torah to understand what God wants from us. So when the Nesim brought the korbanos, the sacrifices, they're really acting on a level of Torah Shebaal Peh, on a level of oral tradition. And that's what was the Chalisha Tzadas, that's what made Aaron so upset. Aaron said, they are involved in the Torah Shebaal Peh, at least I should also have a chelek, a portion in the Torah Shebaal Peh. He felt like only the princes were involved in this and not himself. And that's why immediately he's given what? He's given the mitzvah of menorah. Because what does the menorah represent? It represents the Torah Shebaal Peh. It represents the oral tradition. It's a beautiful imagery that the Netziv brings down in source 8c of how the seven candles that face the inner candles represent the seven wisdoms of the world that all really emanate from Torah. That in order to use Torah Shebaal Peh, you need to know the wisdoms of the world. But you need to know how to use the wisdoms of the world, the math, the sciences, the astrology, the astronomy. You need to use all of that in the context of Torah. The model of the menorah throughout literature is the model, the lights of the Torah Shebaal Peh of the oral tradition. And that's why Aaron is being told yours is even greater than theirs. Because they were involved on a temporary level in bringing the sacrifices, but you are involved on a continual basis in being involved in the teaching and the transmission of the Torah as represented by the menorah, which is the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition. And in fact, there's a great concept that the Or Gedaliahu brings in Source 9, that any time Rabbi Tarfon would hear a great idea, right, so we would yell out, wow, it's an amazing idea, or something like that. He would yell out two words, Kastor Vaferach, which are the knobs and the flowers, which is a reference to the menorah. You came up with a great idea, so you really intuited that which was found in the menorah, because the menorah has all the secrets of the Torah found in it. It's the most deepest Kabbalistic, in a sense, of all of the items in the Mishkan. And therefore, when he heard a great idea, he says, you have really understood what the menorah, the Torah Shebaal Peh, was getting at, and that's why he would yell out, Kastor Vaferach. So if we understand that Aaron was upset because he wasn't part of the Torah Shebaal Peh process, and God told him, no, I'm giving you the menorah, and the menorah is a representation of Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition. And you are involved in disseminating the Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's why yours is greater than theirs. So now we can understand the Ramban. The Ramban says that it's not only the menorah in the times of the temple, it's the menorah of the Chashmonaim, the menorah of Hanukkah as well. And as we know, sources 11 and 12, is that the Hanukkah, this is the Or Gedaliahu in his Moadim section, speaks about at length, the Hanukkah is the holiday of Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's why Hanukkah is never written down. It's not like Megillat Esther that we have a Megillah for it. It's something that is only given over an oral tradition, and in fact, it's the story of Hanukkah that the Gemara asks, we say a bracha when we light Hanukkah candles. If we ever think about it, it's a strange bracha. We say, Asher kedishanu v'sosav etzivanu, who has commanded us and sanctified us in his Torah, lahadlik ner shel Hanukkah, to light the candles of Hanukkah. So if you think about the bracha, you're lying. That he commanded us in the Torah to light the Hanukkah candles. Open up the Torah, I challenge you. Where in the Torah do you find out a command to light the Hanukkah candles? You can't possibly have it. Why not? It's the wrong time. The Torah happened thousands of years before the story of Hanukkah. So what does it mean? How can we lie? Every year we've been lying. 7-8 times a year. How do we lie like this? It's not a lie. Of course not. What does it mean? Asher kedishanu mitzvotav v'tzivanu, command us in the Torah to light Hanukkah candles. Doesn't mean that. It means he commanded us in the Torah to listen to the rabbis. And the rabbis commanded us to do what? To light Hanukkah candles. This is the law of Hanukkah that we really focus in on, the role of the rabbis as being a crucial role in the whole idea of the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And that's why this is on a deeper level what the Ramban means, that yours will last forever. Because yours is not just lighting the menorah on a symbolic level. What yours is the continuation of the written Torah through the oral Torah, through the tradition of the rabbis, and that lasts until today. So we have Moshe, who's the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, and we have Aaron, who's the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral tradition. And the Torah Sheba'al Peh is not only found in the menorah itself, but it's found in the lights of Hanukkah as well. To take this one step deeper, before we get to Miriam, the third in the trio, we can't leave her out, is a beautiful besht, the Baal Shem Tov, that says that Ur HaGanuz, that light that was hidden at the time of creation, where was it hidden? Where is God keeping it in his storehouse? He hid it in the letters of the Torah. So that when you're involved in Torah, this is 4:14, he says, Da'or shel tchilat habriyah, the light of the creation, nignaz v'torah, is found in the Torah. V'yesh lomar da'kavanahi, the meaning is, Da'or ha'ganuz hu'or shel Torah Sheba'al Peh. The hidden light is the light of the oral tradition. Trying to understand the Torah, trying to be involved in the process of Torah, one is uncovering that Ur HaGanuz. It's that famous imagery where the Torah is given Eish Dat Lamo, as the Pasuk in Dvarim describes it. It's an Eish Chorah Gabay Eish Levana, a black fire on a white fire. What's the fire of Torah? The fire of Torah is the Ur HaGanuz, is that original light. It's that powerful light which is hidden within the Torah, and that we have the ability through learning Torah to access that powerful light. And that's why the power of Torah is such a tremendous power to change a person, to heal a person, because it's not just an ordinary light, it's the Ur HaGanuz, the hidden light. And the Baal HaRakeach says, do you know that there is 1 week a year when that Ur HaGanuz, on a metaphysical level, is found within our own homes? And that's the Hanukkah lights. We know, as the Rakeach says in Source 15, that there were 36 hours that the Hanukkah light, that the Ur HaGanuz was lit in the world. The Ur HaGanuz lasted 36 hours and then was hidden. And that's parallels the 36 candles, aside from the Shamus, that we light on the Hanukkah night. The same 36, that each of our candles represents one of the hours of the Ur HaGanuz. Because if we understand that the whole process of Hanukkah, which we just touched on, but the whole aspect of Hanukkah, many levels, is an aspect of Torah Sheba'al Peh, an oral tradition. It's not a written tradition, it's an oral tradition. So therefore, the holiday which celebrates the oral tradition par excellence, would it not make sense that it's that holiday that the Ur HaGanuz, this hidden light, which we uncover through involvement in the Torah, should be found on Hanukkah? So on this level, we understand the two questions that we raised originally. In terms of question number one, what does it mean, this original light that Aaron is continuing? The original light is now found in the Torah. And it's through the oral tradition that we are able to glean that light and bring that out. Aaron, who's commanded to light the menorah, it's not just lighting the menorah, it's the whole process and involvement of what the menorah stands for, which is the oral tradition. By lighting the menorah, he's being involved in uncovering the Or HaGanuz, the hidden light, and being able to share that light as the process of transmission of the Torah evolves. And this explains the Ramban as well, as to why is Hanukkah light a continuation of the menorah when we do it in our own homes? Because Hanukkah represents the Torah Sheba'al Peh, an oral tradition, and therefore the Hanukkah lights are the lights of the Or HaGanuz, the original hidden lights. If that's Moshe, and that's Aaron, so what about Miriam? She also should get a share in this whole process of the... And we see on a much deeper level, it's not only consecrating a physical building, the consecration of the tabernacle is one's involvement in the process and transmission of Torah. So where does Miriam come in? So we know that Miriam had a son whose name was Hur, who was very involved as a leader of the Jewish people. In fact, he was the one who protested when the Jewish people wanted to build the golden calf, the Medrash tells us, and was killed because of it. He died al Kiddush Hashem. And says the Ozayim LaTorah in sources 17 and 18, it was this ability to die al Kiddush Hashem that was really a credit to the influence of his parents, Miriam in particular. And it was Hur's grandson, Miriam's great-grandson, that was involved in the building of the tabernacle, B'Tzalel. B'Tzalel ben Uri ben Hur. So the Ozayim LaTorah points out that of all the aspects that were built in the Mishkan, the one that was the most difficult for Moshe Rabbeinu was the menorah. God showed him a fiery menorah, and Moshe Rabbeinu was told what to do, and then he went back up, and he says, I don't quite understand it. And he went back up and down a couple of times. He says, I just can't get it. So God says, you know what? Do us all a favor. Go to B'Tzalel. He'll be able to build this for you. And sure enough, he was able to build it immediately. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, you must be B'Tzel Kel in the image of God. Play on name B'Tzalel, the two parts, B'Tzel Kel in the image of God, that you knew how to build a menorah. And that's why, says the Ozayim LaTorah, and it's something perhaps we don't realize, if we turn back to the first page, we find that there's a verse here which really doesn't belong. If you want to tell me that we're learning here that Aaron had to light the menorah, so fine, I need verse 1, where God spoke to Moshe, telling him to speak to Aaron, and say to him, when you light the lamps, the seven lamps shall illuminate the menorah. And Aaron did that, lighting the lamps to illuminate the menorah as God commanded Moshe, period. The fourth verse is a verse that we know about already from the book of Shemot. The menorah was made of a single piece of beaten gold. Everything from its base to its blossom consists of a single piece of beaten metal. The menorah that was thus made exactly according to the vision that God showed Moshe. We don't need this. We know this. It's written a number of times in the book of Shemot. Asa, the Ozayim LaTorah, this verse is mentioned because this is the contribution of Miriam to her great-grandson. It's a contribution of B'Tzalel, that he was able to make this menorah which nobody else could do. It's this ability, B'Tzel Kel, in the image of God, says the Or Gedayahu, he was able to have this chus, in this merit, in the merit of his grandfather Hur, and we know the whole essence of Hur comes from Miriam. So really, the sacrifice of Miriam, the connection of Miriam to the tabernacle was through her great-grandson B'Tzalel, who had the ability to intuit and understand what God wanted on a deeper level. And this, if Aaron is the Torah Shebichtav, is the written Torah, and if Moshe Rabbeinu is the written Torah, and Aaron is the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition, so then Miriam becomes the white fire in this whole process. It's the process of the transmission of the Torah, not on specifically a Torah Shebichtav, or not on a level of Torah Shebaal Peh, but on a much deeper level, it's called the environment that allows the Torah to be transmitted. This is a beautiful idea that the Rav mentions in a famous essay, really a speech, a tribute to the town of Revitin, it's Mechutanim, where he says, people are mistaken, source 20, in thinking that there's only one Mesorah and one Mesorah community, the community of the fathers. It's not true. We have two Mesorot, two traditions, two communities. It's the mothers as well as the fathers. Thus shall they say to the house of Yaakov are the women, and tell the children of Israel, the men, the women are before the men. Hear, my son, the instruction of thy father, the Musar Avicha, and forsake not the teaching of thy mother, the Torah Imecha. And he continues in 21 by saying, one learns much from father, how to read a text, the Bible, the Talmud, how to comprehend it. This is the written Torah and the oral Torah, the interface between the two. Father teaches the son the discipline of thought as well as the discipline of action. 22, what is the Torah Imecha? What kind of Torah does the mother pass on? I admit that I'm not able to define precisely the Masoretic role of the Jewish mother. Only by circumscription I hope to be able to explain it. Permit me to draw upon my own experiences. I used to have long conversations with my mother. In fact, it was a monologue rather than a dialogue. She talked, and I happened, quote-unquote, to overhear. What did she talk about? I must use a halachic term. Inyana de Yoma. I used to watch her arranging the house in honor of a holiday. I used to see her recite prayers. I used to watch her recite the Seder every Friday night. And I still remember the nostalgic tune. I learned from her very much. And this is the key in 23. Most of all, I learned that Judaism expresses itself not only in formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me there is a flavor, a scent, and a warmth to mitzvot. I learned from her the most important thing in life, to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of His hand resting upon my frail shoulders. Without her teachings, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence, I would have grown up a soulless being, dry and insensitive. What is the Torah Imecha? It's the white fire which the black fire rests on. It's the white parchment which the black parchment is formed. It's not necessarily the letters, it's the whole environment in which the letters rest. It's a whole gestalt of giving over the Torah in such a way that the person has a desire and enthusiasm and an environment to feel the spiritual aspects of Torah. It's setting the mood, it's setting the tone for the ability for Torah to grow. And that's why it's not no wonder that the woman also has a mitzvah of lights, and that's the mitzvah clearly of the Shabbos candles. And the Shabbos candles, we know, our rabbis teach us, is the inyan of shalom bayis, of peace in the home. It's the environment of the home. And as the Rabbeinu B'chaya in the Perek Yutet of Shmo points out, that it's proper for a woman to daven at the time of lighting candles, that she should have children who are involved, me'irim b'Torah, who light up the path of Torah. Because tefillah is heard best at the time of performance of a mitzvah. And it says so beautifully, ubeschut ner Shabbat shu'or, in the honor and the merit of the mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles, which is a light, tiskel lebanim, she should merit to have children, ba'alei Torah hanikret or, who are involved in the Torah process, which is called light. This is the contribution of Miriam, the Bezalel. It's being in the shadow of God, which is on a much deeper level, not only learning and hearing what God had said, which is what Moshe Rabbeinu heard, but Bezalel means you're in the shadow of God. It's the experience of being, maybe not receiving the law in detail from God Himself, but you can intuit, you can experience, and you can know much more just being Bezalel in the shadow of God. This is level one. What does it mean that Aaron was upset? He was upset because he felt he didn't have a portion in the whole tabernacle experience. And indeed, he did have a great portion. It was the portion of the oral tradition. Moshe had the portion of the written tradition, and Miriam has the portion of Bezalel, which is the experiential transmission of the Torah, the white fire, the Shabbos candles, which create the whole environment. I'd like to work through now, very briefly, level number two. And on this level, it's not only dealing with Aaron, but Aaron and his shevet. There's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Shemi Shmuel. The Shemi Shmuel, according to his father, notes that there's a major difference between the Kohanim, the priests, and the Levim, the Levites. What's the difference? The difference is that the Kohanim job, and I'm summarizing now 25 and 26, is to bring heaven down to earth, to bring the godly fire down to the tabernacle, to make the tabernacle a place where God would like to reside. That's the function of the Kohanim. Said Aaron, I know as a Kohen that I have a job in the tabernacle. My question is, do I, who represents the tribe of Levi, do we in the tribe of Levi also have a job in the tabernacle? Aside from the priests, do the Levites also have a job within the temple? So says God, yes. You know what that job is? The job is not bringing heaven down to earth, it's bringing earth up to heaven. And that's why the task of Levi 25 is to connect earth to heaven. His role in the Beis HaMikdash is as a singer. Through his beautiful melodies, he inspires the people to turn heavenwards, lifting them from their physical limitations to the spiritual world. And this job of the menorah is really not one of the jobs of the Kohanim. Anyone really could light the menorah. They couldn't prepare it, but anyone could light it. Because the job of the menorah is really not a Kohen, quote-unquote, job. Because what does the menorah do? It doesn't bring God's light from heaven to earth. It brings the light from earth to heaven. And this we see in that beautiful Rashi, which begins the parasha. When you light, literally raise up, b'ha'alotcha, it doesn't say b'hadlikcha, when you light the menorah, b'ha'alotcha, when you have it ascend. The lights, the seven lights shall throw light toward the face of menorah. So Rashi, based on the Medrash, comments, well, why does it say b'ha'alotcha, when you raise up, when it should say b'hadlikcha, when you light? So he says, since the flame arises, the word for raising is written in the context of lighting. For one needs to light, hold the taper next to the wick until the flame arises on its own. B'ha'alotcha is teaching us it's not just enough to light the candle, but you have to light it in such a way that it's going to catch on and be able to light itself, so to speak. It's the concept of ascending, of moving upwards. 28, as we see, the Torah goes out of its way to indicate that not only must Aaron light the menorah, but the flames must rise heavenwards before the act of lighting is considered complete. This symbolizes Levi's style of worship, raising the physical toward God, igniting enthusiasms for matters spiritual in the hearts of the people. So lighting of the menorah is a Levitical activity carried out by a Kohen. And this clearly says the Shem Yishmuel in 29 through 31, is why when exile comes and the earth is not prepared to experience right now in the time of darkness and time of so much evil reigning in the world, it can't possibly experience heaven coming down to earth. We're not the proper conduit to be able to experience God's holiness. But what we have the challenge of doing, and most particularly the challenge now when so much evil and so much darkness reigns in the world, we have the challenge of Levi, and that is to take this world and bring it up to heaven. If we can't bring heaven down to earth because we're not on this level, we do have the obligation and the challenge to take earth and bring it up to heaven. And that's the symbolism of the Chanukah menorah. And that's why by Chanukah we have the concept of Pirsumei Nisa, to publicize the miracle. Because we're not just publicizing the miracle, the Inyan of menorah, and this is why the Ramban says he was placated by this, because what the menorah represents is throughout all times of Jewish history, we have the ability of taking the earth and raising it up toward heaven, elevating who we are to a more spiritual nature. And that's why the lighting of the menorah and the Chanukah experience of elevating heaven, earth to heaven, it's not only a concept called lighting a menorah. It's much deeper than that. As we know, 32, Torah studies, the writings of Lubavitcher Rebbe, that the lamps of the menorah of the sanctuary are a symbol of Jewish soul. The lamp of God is the soul of man, and the seven lamps are the seven kinds of Jewish soul. Aaron's task was to raise up every soul, to bring out the divine within the Jew from its concealment in the subconscious. And that's what B'ha'alotcha means. That Aaron was to kindle them until the flame rises by itself. Aaron's spiritual achievement was therefore not only to light the flame in the souls of the Jewish people, but to take them to the stage where they could give light of their own accord. He did not simply create disciples. He engendered in them a love of God that could sustain without his help. It's a beautiful idea. It's not just a question of lighting the menorah, but the menorah has to, so to speak, pick up the wick itself. It has to light that it can light itself. And that's why in the Gardens of the Torah, another book based on the Sichas of the Rebbe, he interprets allegorically each of the expressions of Rashi reflecting a concept about chinuch, about education. The flame, every person is potentially a lamp, but a flame realizes the potential producing radiant light, rises, a person should not remain content with his current level, no matter how refined. Instead, he should seek to proceed further, searching for a higher and more complete degree of divine service. On its own, a person must internalize his influence of his teachers until their light becomes his own. Moreover, 34, he should rise on his own, i.e., the desire to proceed should become one's own nature. Even without the encouragement of others, he should continually seek to advance. Similarly, when teaching others, our intent should be that they also become a flame which rises on its own independent lamp. And that's why a teacher, he notes in 35, should be very careful not to cookie cut one's students, that everyone should be exactly the same. It should not be conformity, but rather every individual has to rise to who they are and to what they represent in being a light that they can grow and they can move forward in their service of God. So on a deeper level, what Aaron is really all about is not only lighting the menorah, but rather the task of bringing earth up to heaven, lighting the souls of the people, to the point where you're not only creating disciples, as he says, but engendering within them a love that they can sustain themselves, and that v'haloscha, you're constantly going up. That's the name of the parsha. Parsha which has a lot of movement, a lot of traveling of Jewish people, as the Rebbe notes. The whole name of the parsha is based on this concept that you have to move forward. You can't just stay stagnant. You just can't stay in place. I'd like to suggest very briefly that this then becomes the theme of the parsha. One of the themes of the parsha. The desire within a person always to move forward, always to be that candle whose flame, whose flicker is always going up. We know this about a candle, right? In any direction you put a candle or a match, in which direction does the flame go? Always pointing upward. That's the power of a candle. That's always moving, and that flicker, the desiring always to move forward and never being complacent. And I think that the Torah gives us two models back to back where we see this idea in one group who had this desire to move forward and the other group who didn't have this desire. The group that had the desire to move forward is the story of Pesach Sheni, which you mentioned at the beginning of this year, which really doesn't belong in this week's parsha in terms of a chronological level. But conceptually, I think perhaps we can say it's here in order to give us a balance of two approaches in the Bahalotcha, in this concept of raising oneself up. What did they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, source 36, chapter 9, verse 7? We are ritually unclean as a result of contact with the dead. But why should we lose out and not be able to present God's offering at the right time along with the other Israelites? Okay, so we're ritually impure, but find a way. Find somehow that we can bring the Korban Pesach, the sacrificial lamb. Look at what these people are saying. Technically, do they have to bring it? The answer is no. They're putter, they're unclean, they don't have to bring it. But they have such a desire to grow and such a desire to cling to God, they're saying, well, you have to find some loophole. Give us a way in order to do it. And Mepharshim explained the Yaakov Lekach Tov in Source 37, most of us try to figure out ways how we can get out of things. What was special about them? They were trying to figure out ways on how to have a chiyuv, how to do it. Like he gives the example, there was a period of time in Jewish history that they would bring the trumas of maestros, they would bring in their produce from the land, not directly into the door of the house, but through the attic and through the roof, because the halacha is you're only chayav and truma maitros if it comes through the actual door. So they'd figure out ways to bring it into the house so they wouldn't have to give it. So they were careful that they would, you know, they didn't want to eat something that didn't have truma maitros, but they would figure out a way where they didn't have to do it. And that's so often in life. We try to figure out a way how we don't have to do it, right? We'll eat a little bit less cake so we don't stay in alamechya. No, we should want to do as much as we can. This is what they represent. And this is what the Rav Moshe speaks about in Trash Moshe in 38 and 39, that even if you can't do a mitzvah, let's say you're very sick and you can't do a mitzvah, but at least try to be involved in some level in the process of the mitzvah, because that shows that you're really upset you can't do it. So if you can't sit in the sukkah because of whatever reason, to be involved in building the sukkah or help in some way, at least show that you love the mitzvah, you want to be involved in the mitzvah. It reminds me of a phone call I got this past Hanukkah. It was a Sunday night. It was a Yula student of mine who was studying in Israel who had come home for Hanukkah. She called me from JFK Airport. You know, her plane went from LAX to JFK to Israel. So I got really nervous. Why is she calling me from JFK? She sounded really upset. So I said to her, what's going on? She said, tonight's the last night of Hanukkah. And I knew that I would be in air on the last night of Hanukkah. And I asked my rabbi in Israel whether I could light Hanukkah candles tonight. And he said no, because it's near Yishuv Esau, every man in their household. You don't have a house, you're in the middle of a plane. She says, but here our plane got delayed at JFK. And all these people, Reish Chabad was giving out all these candles, all these people are lighting candles. I so want to light Hanukkah candles. Is there any way, Mrs. Smiles, I could light Hanukkah candles even though I was told I can't? She called me from JFK, upset because she couldn't light Hanukkah candles. This is what we're talking about, as someone who has a passion to be involved in mitzvah, that they want to do the mitzvah. This is what we need to look for. This is the model of the Pesach Sheni. Just one other brief story, and then we'll conclude. The story is told about Rav Schwab, who we've used to say for many times, Mayan Beit HaShoeivah, Rav Shimon Schwab, who is very careful about doing the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana, of sanctifying the new moon. And he never missed a chance to do it. As soon as earliest opportunities, he always did it. And once, when he was very sick, he was in an ICU unit, and one of his sons arranged for him to have a room in the hospital, a private room at Columbia Presbyterian. And he asked his son, which side of the hospital did you get me a room on the east or the west? So he said, I got you one on the west wing. He said, that's unacceptable. I need to see the moon. I need to be on the east wing. And the end result was he never left the ICU, and that was the first time in his life that he never benched Kiddush HaChodesh, and they said he didn't make it through the month. He died that particular month. But this is a person who has a desire. So he's sick. He's in bed. He's on the other side of the hospital. What do you want? So he can't do the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. Okay, it happens. You can't do it. Kiddush Levana. But if someone really has a passion for it, so it's unacceptable, you got me a hospital room on the west wing, I need one on the east wing. This is what we have to have. And this is contrasted with the Jewish people, who we know, the rabbis explained to us, that when they left Mount Sinai, there was a little bit of a critique on the way they left. As Rashi quotes, they left Kitino Kaboreach Mibeit HaSefer, like a kid runs out of school at that last bell. I mean, they're out of there faster, you say boo. So they left Har Sinai on a certain level was a critique, even though they were on a very high level. And rabbis explained what was the critique. They were saying is, we have enough mitzvah. If we stay here any longer, who knows, we may be given more mitzvahs. That's a certain problem, where you say, you know what, enough is enough, I don't want any more. And the Haftarah Rabbi Yerucham says in sources 42 and 43, he says, we have to examine ourselves. Are we on the level, really, of the Pesach Sheni, where we look for opportunities to do mitzvahs? Or are we on that level saying, you know what, enough is enough, and I can't be pushed any further, and I already feel burdened as is, and if I have any opportunity to get out of doing a mitzvah, this is what I'd like to do. What is Va'aloscha Tanei wrote about, that we should be constantly that flame going upward, having that desire to not try to figure out how to get out of doing obligations, but how can we have our flame ascend upward and do more and more and more from our own volition, that we want to do it, not because we're coerced by our teachers or by our parents or by our environment or by our society, but this is something deeply within each of us, each and every one of us as an individual in our service of God. And that brings us to our last point of this Or HaGadlus is hidden light. If we said that the Or HaGadlus is hidden light is found in the Torah, Sheba'al Peh and the sound of the Torah and the oral tradition brings out this light. And Chanukah is the time that we're able to see this light because it's a celebration of the oral tradition. There's another time that we're able to see this Or HaGanus. It's a very famous concept which is brought down in Source 44, is that when the child is in its mother's womb, it too has a light above its head with the same language that's used by the Adam HaRishon, the first man seeing the light from one end of the world to the other. Our soul in the mother's womb sees from one end of the world to the other, has that deep perspective of that same Or HaGanus. And then what happens to this light? That light is becomes our soul and it descends into our body and it becomes who we are, but our physical aspects of our life block that light that it can't develop as much as it potentially could, not being in physical constraints. And indeed, the Sfarim write that on a person's birthday, that original light of the Or HaGanus is found in everyone's life. That original powerful light. And perhaps one can say this is the source of birthday candles. Because the birthday candles really reflect what? Reflect that inner light, that Or HaGanus, that inspiration that a person gets on their birthday. And clearly we know one should never blow up birthday candles. The whole Indian of blowing out candles, not for today, but particularly birthday candles. Have them on the cake, put them on the side, look at them, like the Hanukkah candles, be inspired by them, because it reflects that Or HaGanus, that inner light. But I think on the deeper level, what the Or HaGanus within us is saying is, you have within, each and every one of us has within us, that powerful light. That light from the creation is found within us. It's called our soul. And what Aaron is doing by lighting that original Zohar, by lighting the candle every day, that Aaron did this, Melamed Shloshina, he didn't change. What it means he didn't change it is that every day he was involved in trying to bring out a deeper level of that hidden light within him. The lighting of the menorah is just a physical manifestation of what Aaron represents of trying to bring out the best, trying to fulfill one's potential, trying to always come closer to God. Every single day, Melamed Shloshina, he didn't change. He was always involved in Bahalotcha Tanayro, in trying to aspire to greater and greater heights. And that's the lesson of Aaron for us. That we who have this light within us have to always say, how can we grow closer to God and not try to figure out ways to try to take away from our responsibility and our obligations. So in summary, the Or HaGanus, this hidden light that Aaron is continuing from the creation story, can be understood on two levels. It's the light of the oral tradition, or it's the light inherent in each person in terms of their service of God. And the Medrash that the Ramban spoke about, that the lights of Chanukah were the appeasement to Aaron. The lights of Chanukah represents the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral tradition, which is what Aaron and the menorah represent. Or the lights of Chanukah represents the earth being brought up to heaven. And that's our job, is to take the physical lights of this world, to take our potential, to take our spirituality, and bring it heavenward, like the people who wanted to bring the Pesach Sheni. We want to be obligated, we want to have a relationship, and we're not like children running out of school and trying to divert ourselves from more and extra responsibility.